right, everybody. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, and welcome to the first official episode of the Waterfowlers Heritage Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Nathan Vaughn, and I'm really excited to get you guys into the topic today. And what we're going to be focusing on is a really interesting topic as far as American duck hunting goes, and that is the story and the history of the Labrador duck. So just a little bit of background on it, you know, the Labrador duck was a species of sea duck or diver duck that lived in the eastern half of North America during the up until about the late 1800s, early 1900s is when we think the last ones disappeared, but they are more than likely the first and probably the most notable of the North American waterfowl to have gone extinct since the Columbian Exchange, at least the ones that we know of, partly because they were such an interesting looking bird and with them carried a lot of history that kind of relays to the stories of the passenger pigeon and the great auk bird that lived over in the British Isles. But we're going to be diving into some of the history of that specific bird, some descriptions, how it went extinct, what it was most likely, you know, like when it was around, and what we've learned from its story today, along with a very interesting story coming from an individual who is quite possibly the last person to shoot and harvest a Labrador duck on this North American continent. So stick with us, stay tuned, and as always, thank you guys for being here. Well, everybody, let's dive right in. So before we get into some of the history related to humans of the Labrador duck, let's look a little bit and understand what the Labrador duck was, how it lived, and what it looked like. So I know y'all can't necessarily look at a picture right now, but I encourage you to look one up on your phones or computers whenever you get the chance. But I'm looking at a picture of one right now, and they're a very interesting looking bird. You know, if I had to compare it to any living duck that we all may be familiar with, I'd say it has a lot of resemblances to a scoter or an eider, which, you know, makes sense given the terrain it lived in. It was a sea duck. It lived in the coastal protected waters and even out into the coastal waters itself, like out into the open ocean. But we don't really know a lot about that. We just know the interactions that humans had with it during their time here when that cohabitated with the North American settlement. But some interesting things about it, you know, it had a black-tipped bill, which is said to have been very soft, which makes sense given it's thought that the diet of this duck was primarily that of eating crustaceans and mollusks off the bottom of muddy water. So these protected inland coastal areas and even just offshore will have muddy, silty bottoms that contained a lot of crustaceans and other items for them to eat. And it's thought that that soft bill helped them, the soft, flat bill, help them to dive down deeper into the water and really rustle up the bottom, similar to what we'd see from like a spoonbill, which is an interesting thing to kind of look at here in the fact that this is a sea duck, but it's kind of like a Frankenstein duck, if I had to give it a nickname, I would say, because it resembles these sea ducks, like I stated, scoters and eiders, but the bill specifically reminds me a lot of a spoonie, given the way it's shaped and just the description of it being sort of a soft bill, in the sense that it was used to really filter out that silt on the bottom. It was a primarily black and white duck, had a white head with a black crest along the top, covered in black along its back with white wings and black tips on the wings. As far as where it lived, it wintered anywhere from northern Nova Scotia all the way down through the Chesapeake Bay down into Cape Hatteras in North Carolina is as far as we've ever had interactions with them as humans on this continent. But like I said earlier, you know, the bill shape, as far as its diet goes, was a mollusk eater. It didn't really seem to eat a lot of plants like we might find with ducks. I know, you know, nowadays in the era of planting food plots and impoundments for waterfowl, we're really focused on that grain crop as far as what these puddle ducks are eating. But this seems to be a primarily mollusk-focused duck who really ate living animals and crustaceans off the bottom of the water. We really don't know a whole lot else about the bird in terms of its behavior other than what we understand about its feeding habits based on what we've analyzed from the bill. Nesting habits, you know, it was as a coastal nester, so I would guess that it nested similar to other coastal birds like eiders, scoters, and even puffins across the pond over in the European continent. But as far as its migration and other aspects of it go, it really followed the same kind of path as we would see from scoters and eiders, long-tailed ducks, birds that really traverse the coastline and work their way along that rocky shore and the protected coastal waters down into the mid-Atlantic area, where it would have spent its winter months feeding and getting fat before heading back north into its breeding range. But that's pretty much the best description we have on this very interesting bird. I mean, it's always wonderful to be able to look at an extinct animal simply because we don't necessarily know a whole lot about it. I mean, same goes for animals like the passenger pigeon, where despite there being good numbers of them, we just don't know a whole lot about it. I mean, it's a beautiful bird, a wonderful bird, and something interesting to look at, but we don't know a whole lot about it in terms of what it did while it was alive. But there are a lot of things that we can take from its time on this planet and our conservation strategies in terms of how we manage ducks in modern times. Now, as far as what we understand about the last ones that were shot, there's actually some very interesting stories about that, and that's something I would like to tell y'all about today. So this story itself is coming from ducksunlimited.org, and it's a story written by Chris Madsen. This is the account of the last known Labrador duck to be shot in North America. And this takes place on December 10th, 1878. The story starts out by saying it was a heck of a storm. It roared down from Newfoundland on December 10th, 1878, and lashed the northeast for 2 days. The Barkington Belle Keith was driven ashore on Cape Hatteras, along with the brig William Mallory. The schooner Connecticut broke away from her moorings in New York Harbor. The Passaic River rose 6 feet above the rain stopped. The Susquehanna ran 16 feet above its low water mark, and the temperature plummeted. Legend has it that a teenage boy in southwestern New York reacted to the rough weather by grabbing a shotgun and heading out to a tract of bottomland timber along the Chemung River called the Buttonwoods. This is an interesting part of the story, kind of getting away from it right here, but I think that all of us as waterfowlers and duck hunters, we understand this kid's mindset right here. He sees that north wind blowing, the gale, the nasty weather, and what does he instinctively do? He grabs his shotgun and heads to the first available duck hole he can find. Back to the story. The river had flooded the trees, and the sharp change in weather no doubt brought a wave of ducks into the country. There's no record of how many birds the young hunter brought home, but a rumor about one of the birds in his bag quickly spread through the nearby town of Elmira. It was a sea duck, which was strange so far inland. It's likely that no local hunter had ever seen anything like it. Word got around to William H. Gregg, an avid local birder, who paid a visit to the boy's family, hoping to take a look at the bird and collect the skin. Unfortunately, the story goes the duck had already been plucked and eaten. All that was left to science was the head and the neck. Gregg took the remains home and preserved them. He was confident enough in his identification to report to the officials at American Field Naturalist the first specimen of pied duck, one of several historical names for the Labrador duck, known to occur in this locality, was taken December 12, 1878. He wrote, "It is rare everywhere, and its occurrence so far south in the interior gives special interest to the subject." Rare was an understatement. The bird on the Chemung River was the last specimen of the Labrador duck ever reported. In the years that followed, several committed ornithologists searched for others. They watched the markets in New York and Boston for birds that had been brought from commercial gunners. They put out the word to hunters in remote parts of the North Country. Nothing. A naturalist on an expedition to the Arctic with Robert Perry carried illustrations of the species with him and asked natives in Greenland whether they had seen anything like it. No one had. The birds were gone before science had done much more than give them a name. Most of what we know about them comes from the reports of the 19th century hunters. In 1829, the pioneering naturalist Alexander Wilson offered a description that was never significantly expanded. This is a rather scarce species on our coast and is never met with on freshwater lakes or rivers. It is called by some gunners the sandshoal duck from its habitat of frequenting sandbars. Its principal food appears to be shellfish, which it procures by diving. The flesh is dry and partakes considerably of the nature of its food. Of the particular manner, place, or mode of breeding, nothing more is known. So let's look back here before we continue on and kind of understand what is going on here. So to go back into the story itself about this last individual that was shot, what really stands out to me is the fact that this boy went out, saw the conditions were right, grabbed his shotgun and went out hunting. And I want all of us to kind of picture ourselves in this mindset and in this mode. All of us going out on a nice winter day, the conditions are right, the birds are moving in. We go out to our favorite duck hole and we shoot a duck that we've never necessarily seen before. This guy did the exact same thing, and little to his knowledge, he had shot the last recorded Labrador duck ever. How would we feel as hunters if we were to go out and shoot something that had never been seen before by anyone in our area, and it just so happens to be the last one? I think that level of unknown is one of the things that draws all of us to waterfowl hunting, and it's the fact that we go out every day when we go out duck hunting, not knowing what exactly we may shoot. You know, we may have a good idea, but we don't know for sure. But we go out there every day, we go at it, we do our job, but we love it. We love every aspect of it, regardless of whether or not we encounter something new or something strange. But we go out there, we work, we try our hardest, and we enjoy being in God's creation. Getting back to the story, the seasonal appearance of the bird along the American coast as far south as Chesapeake Bay suggested that it was migratory, but no reliable observer ever reported seeing a hen on a nest or tending a brood. So here's something interesting that I would like to personally kind of look at right here, and it's the fact that even though these birds went extinct in the late 1800s, it's hard to understand whether or not this was due to human interference as far as market hunting goes, using punt guns and killing hundreds of birds at a time, or whether or not this was a bird that was on the brink before humans even arrived. And, you know, as far as science understands now, that is most likely the opinion. It's the fact that this bird was a rare bird at the start, and it went extinct on its own without too much interference from humans. This can be seen partly because, you know, as was stated here, that the flesh was dry and it wasn't very flavorful because it took on the flavors of what it was eating, which was mollusks and shellfish. But this was not necessarily a sought-after bird for market hunters as far as the taste goes, because it wouldn't have sold well in market. But also, there's not a whole lot of reports as far as these being killed at all during human habitation on this continent. The fact that these weren't reported much really makes us wonder, you know, where was this bird at the time when we arrived? And was the fact that it died out somewhat our fault, as was the passenger pigeon? Or was this a dying breed that had its day's numbers prior to human interference? While collecting along the coast of Quebec with his famous father in 1833, John Woodhouse Audubon found several deserted nests placed on top of the low, tangled fir bushes. A local told the younger Audubon that these were the nests of the pied duck being the Labrador duck. Unfortunately, two other ducks, the surf scoter and common goldeneye, which are two birds that we as Eastern North American waterfowl hunters are quite familiar with, were also known as pied ducks at the time. So while the pied duck was in fact a name for the Labrador duck, it was also a name given to the... It was also a name given to the surf scoter and the common goldeneye during this area of Quebec. So we're not quite sure what this young boy meant when he told Audubon that he had encountered a pied duck nest. Was he talking about a Labrador duck, or was he talking about surf scoters and goldeneyes? Back to the story. Very few Labrador duck eggs were ever collected. Today, only 9 are known to exist, and there's no way of knowing whether they are genuine. The label on an egg in England says it was collected on Disco Island in Canada's Baffin Bay. Another is said to have come from Calton, a small town in southwestern Ontario. William Ross King, a British Army officer and avid sportsman, who was billeted along the St. Lawrence River in the 1860s, published an overview of game animals in the region in 1866. According to King, the pied duck, or Labrador duck, is common in the Gulf of St. Lawrence and breeds on its northern shore, a short distance from inland. So this area right here is actually the only entrance we have of the Labrador duck being, one, connected to the name pied duck directly, but also being called a common bird. It seems that everywhere else it's referenced, it is quite rare and very rarely seen. Most authorities have been reluctant to speculate on the extent of its breeding grounds, nesting habits, or migratory routes. It was apparently a sea duck, which suggests that it would nest on or near coastlines. The common eider seems to share some of the food habits of the Labrador duck, as I stated earlier, and it's plausible to presume that the two ducks shared both breeding ranges and migratory routes. So all of us that are going out and shooting common eiders along the eastern coast, you know, in Massachusetts, Virginia, North Carolina, It's quite likely that we are shooting an animal that mirrored the habits of this long extinct bird. After reading all the story, it leads us to ask the ultimate question. Why did the Labrador disappear? Was it because of our own human guns? Or is this a species that was destined for extinction long before? This passing went largely unnoticed by young America at this time. The passenger pigeon, Carolina parakeet, and heath hen were short to follow the Labrador duck into extinction and into the void. Many people didn't comprehend what they had lost at this time. Perhaps the saddest part of the Labrador duck's disappearance is that to this day, we don't know if or how we contributed to its demise. The lesson that can be taken from this species, and that we have played into our own modern conservation lessons, is the fact that while we may try now to preserve what we have left, species like the Labrador duck are gone forever, never to return to their coastal breeding grounds, never to be taken by another young boy going out into his favorite duck hole. And us, as modern hunters, really need to focus on this fact, that it's our job to preserve our wildlife, help our wetlands, and really contribute in all ways that we can to the preservation of different wildlife. Because we all hope that we will never be in the same situation that that boy was going out on the perfect day to duck hunt and killing the last of a species. Thank you all very much for listening to this podcast today. I really enjoyed giving it to y'all and going through some of this information about the Labrador duck and reading this story to y'all. I want us all to kind of focus on the fact that the Labrador duck, while being a beautiful duck, is one of the skeletons of our past in the sense that it's a bird that we will never be able to see glide down a long line or land into a marsh along the coast. And we all need to really focus on preserving what we have and contributing in whatever ways we can to the preservation of the species we still have today. Thank you guys very much for listening. I hope this tale of the Labrador duck was a wonderful introduction into what this podcast is going to be about. Please like this podcast, tell a friend, and share it if you're able. Thank you guys very much, and we will see you next week.